This podcast is proud to be part of the TalkSport Fan Network. TalkSport. Powered by fans.
And there it is. That's as good as it gets on this stage. Nissan Townstar EV strikes again. It's an unstoppable van. Unstoppable!
Look, just fantastic. You can actually see the ProPilot technology in action. Effortless parallel parking.
It moves with all the confidence that comes with a 5-year warranty.
And with a bench full of all-star van experts, there's real strength in depth here.
That's all-star quality.
Search Nissan Townstar EV and visit your local all-star van centre to see for yourself.
Terms and conditions apply. 5 years or 100,000 miles, whichever comes first.
ProPilot is an advanced driver assist technology. Driver's responsibility to stay alert, drive safely, and control vehicle at all times.
The TalkSport Fan Network is proudly supported by McDelivery, bringing you the food you love. McDelivery brings a top-tier lineup of food right to your door. No matter the result, you'll always be winning with McDelivery. Order now on the McDonald's app and you'll get rewards points delivered too, so that ordering today means some tasty rewards for tomorrow. Only via app at participating restaurants. 18 plus rewards registration required. Points only on menu items, delivery fee and terms apply. See mcdonalds.com.
By my reckoning, there's still some money from that £100 million left. are you still hoping to bring some new faces in?
I think we're quite satisfied where we're at the moment. We've got a really healthy squad, some good numbers in there. You know, and there will be some outgoings as well on loan before the window closes.
Welcome to the My Old Man Said podcast, season 2021/22. I'm David Michael, the editor of My Old Man Said, and your host. Joining me to discuss the commencement of another season, Mr. Chris Bird and Mr. Phil Shaw. Welcome.
Hello, sir. How are you?
Hello.
Well, I was all depressed this week, and the only thing I was hanging on to was the wonder of seeing Villa start a new season with a new look team, and I sunk even deeper into depression after Saturday afternoon attempt. So how are you?
I'm all right. I'm quite looking forward to being back at Villa Park.
Oh, yes.
Nice to be feeling human again after COVID and doing normal things again.
Would you consider going to Villa Park normal?
Good question.
How are you, Mr. Shaw?
I'm all good. I feel part of the pride is what I feel, because I've just got my new Claret membership pack in, and it's brilliant. It's got a scarf, it's got a badge, it's got
free flights, nice little, it's got everything.
Yes, it's got everything. Like, only thing's missing is an invitation to high tea with Perslow. That's the only thing that's missing. That's great. It's a great pack.
Invite to where?
Invite to like a high tea or something, or afternoon tea with Perslow.
Ah, afternoon tea. Gotcha. You can see what they've done there. You know, season ticket holder, you remortgage your house to get that bloody season ticket, and the letter comes in the post with your season card.
And a car sticker.
And some shitty little sticker. And then it's to try to upsell you to get that membership pack as well, because you suddenly feel the FOMO as you see the pictures of the scarf and all kinds of crap. I remember when I had to pull the stunt of joining another club's membership scheme. Without naming the club, to go into their marvellously modern new stadium for the start of the season. I wonder who that could be. And the pack came, and I thought, fuck me, I might as well support these guys, because they're obviously serving out the goodies with their membership. I think the Villa membership at that time was you just got the card and that was it.
You got a slap, didn't you?
These guys, you get the scarf, you get the mobile device holder, which actually turned out to be very useful, but I did have to put some mom stickers over the top of that bloody cockerel. Oh, sorry, I shouldn't have mentioned cockerel. That was too much of a clue. All kind of pictures, all kinds of stuff. And you think, well, yeah, that actually makes you feel like a member. But season ticket holders should definitely get some little extras and trinkets as well, rather than purposely trying to upsell them. Right, so let's get on with this show, shall we? Coming up in the show, we get into the Villa news to bring you up to date. What's going on from crypto to potential franchises of the club. We also have a look at the media Muppet activity of the week before we get into the 3 points, which includes potential revision of the financial fair play system, George Best's Airbnb venture, as well as Messi shenanigans and how La Liga rules were bent for him, before getting into the main show where we look at what has to be considered a false start. Considering our preparation, it was not really a surprise in terms of our pre-season and what's been going on, so we'll get into that and analyze the conclusions that we drew from the first 90 minutes of the season. Right, should we get into the Villa news, or do you want to talk about the Taliban occupation of Afghanistan first? Those are the options.
Let's go with the Villa news.
Right, what's been happening in the Villaverse? Richard O'Kelly disappeared as one of the Greek chorus of coaches. The only thing odd about it, because you know he's getting on a bit, and maybe they want to freshen things up. There's 110 reasons why he could go, but to do it suddenly like 2 days before the season starts was a bit odd. Smith said there's nothing sinister about it. There's been a kind of a spin where it's been inferred that O'Kelly thought he could take the team as far as he could and he's kind of stepped down. I don't know if I buy into that one. Why would you decide with 2 days to go to the season start? Seems a bit odd to me. Maybe you just can't stand the set-piece coach. Maybe there was a personality conflict there. What was your views quickly?
Well, I mean, Smith had said, you know, I think if Terry had gone when he did, O'Kelly would have probably gone sooner. So it's right. Obviously been on the horizon for a while that they thought it would happen. So they're obviously going to be getting somebody in the immediate future, I'd have thought.
So he was just covering his backside.
Yeah, I think so. And looking out for his mate.
I mean, we had so many coaches, which is normally, as a football fan, you know that you've got a manager and you've got an assistant manager. That's normally as far as you need to go, really, don't you? It seemed to slow Villa's decision-making down because, you know, there you were as a fan watching the game. I don't know, 70 minutes gone and there's obvious changes need to be made to try to change the direction of a game. I'm just talking about last season. And, you know, the camera pans in and then there's Cutler, Terry, Shakespeare, O'Kelly and Smith all having a big conversation. It's like, I'm not buying into this. I prefer a manager who knows what he's doing, if you know what I mean.
It's certainly nice to have maybe one or two go, is this what we should do? Yeah, great, let's do it.
Yeah.
We said before, didn't we, like you can turn on a sixpence then. It always felt like you were slowing down making proactive decisions, but alas.
Yeah.
Maybe anyway, they should have used a blockchain solution and let everyone else vote on it.
Yes. Funny enough, we mentioned socios, which are like a fan token, you know, based on crypto, but it is crypto essentially. And the latest club to sign up, Leeds, funny enough, a couple of days after the show went out, Aston Villa announced that they too were subscribing to socios, the fan tokens. I've been following the progression of socios going back probably 3 years to when West Ham signed up and then after supporter pressure ditched the idea. Fast forward when we had one of these fan consultation group meetings with Purslow, I was running by him a few things that were, let's say, you know, future-proving the conversation. So one of the things was the idea of facial recognition technology. Would that be used? Is that something the club would consider? And that got a no. And then I said, and also, socios, these fan tokens, which could be used for engagement for fans to vote on things. But then you've got that situation where fans are actually paying essentially for their engagement. He said, no, you know, we would never do that. Fast forward, about a year and a half, and here we are. Seems to be a bit of a U-turn on them. This is something I'm going to talk about, I think, on a Patreon podcast, because there's various ways of looking at it, and I've got some insights. I think what they've changed from that West Ham model and what they learned from that was the idea of giving every season ticket holder a member one free token. So then you could actually vote on everything that anybody else can vote on. I mean, basically, it's a money grab off overseas fans. Overseas fans are by default kind of passive. They're not, they pay for merchandise, but they're not giving you match going revenue. So this is one way to get money off them. But we'll discuss it in more detail in a podcast. Speaking of other endeavours, Wes Edens and Nassif Suarez have actually registered the trademark Las Vegas Villains. And this is obviously to be a MLS franchise. So we know where the Villains name comes from. So there's a potential there to replicate what City have done. I think City's owners have got about 10 clubs now in their mini consortium, haven't they?
Yeah. Pack your bags, lads. We're off to Vegas.
I can't wait for my Vegas membership pack. It'll be great.
Viva Las Villa.
Yeah, you don't have to pay much taxes there, do you? That's why a lot of these YouTubers all disappear there. But the only weird thing about this is that they've put the I in Villains. Now, obviously, that's because the layman who's getting into this team for the first time, that's how you spell Villains, Villains. But obviously, it's a nod from Aston Villa. And if you're a villain in the Villa verse, there's no I in it. Well, no second I, should I say, in Villains. So that's the only bone of contention there. But I suppose it is another club. Moving on, Villa have drawn a team they've never played before, if I am correct. Barrow time, away to Barrow, which is on the northwest coast, kind of near, is it near Morecambe-ish area?
Yeah, by the Lake District. Yeah, it's a bloody long way.
Yeah, it's probably closer for me as a crow flies.
Oh, easily.
Completely. So there's a chance for some away fans to tick a stadium off their list that they probably didn't even know existed. So something novel for the season. Meanwhile, the captaincy of Aston Villa has gone to Mings with McGinn as the vice captain. No surprise whatsoever there in that combination. I think most people would have put their house on that if they had to make a bet on it. No complaints either.
No, not at all. Mings is a comes across a nice guy. He's a good, spokesperson and leader and role model. And McGinn, I think, is a really sort of a good choice as well. It might make him level up a little bit, and he obviously gives your club a bit of personality because he's a naturally quite a funny guy.
Thing is, though, we'll get onto that, but is he a first 11 player? That's something that's up for debate maybe later on in the podcast. Right, time for Media Muppets. So, Phil, what's in the Media Muppet trough this week?
This week, it's the story that broke that John Terry apparently convinced Grealish to leave Villa. So this was started by Neil Costas in The Sun and then was immediately parroted by Max Matthews in the Daily Mail.
So the scenario is Terry's jumped ship from Villa, but oh, by the way, it was his fault for Jack Grealish leaving. He persuaded him to leave. That's how it appears, doesn't it, from the headlines?
Exactly, that's what gets everybody to click it. And then whenever they click it, they find out Terry just said to Grealish, there's nothing like standing there and hearing the Champions League anthem. That's it, nothing else at all.
And he probably told him that about 5 years ago.
Yeah, like no shit, I'm sure there's standing there for the anthem does feel good, but Terry probably told Grealish all other things felt good as well. And they used Terry as the example when he was virtually a one-club man for most of his career. I mean, it's just there's just nothing in it at all. It's just filling more and more column inches. That's it.
Yeah. Another thing. I mean, while we're on the subject of Mr. Grealish, a lot of fans got triggered because Amazon Prime put out it's an ad, social media ad, Grealish's face with a quote which was actually stitched together from I think his Manchester City welcome to the club interviews, and they take two quotes, put them together, and the dot dot dots there to show that it isn't a one solid statement. I think most people know what I'm referring to. Basically, you're saying Manchester City are better than Aston Villa for players, wasn't it? It was either reckless or done with let's get some engagement here.
And you kind of he's teed it up as well. If anything, by as soon as you start on his statement by saying with all due respect, you kind of know where it's going.
But he's talking, this is from a conversation where
he's talking about him not getting doubled up at City and not getting,
Yeah, exactly. And it's taken out of context and just put there to imply that, and the way they use that, with all due respect, in a condescending fashion, when actually originally it wasn't.
Yeah.
So, basically Grealish has been stitched up there and fans get super triggered because that's what you're meant to be doing in this situation.
I think there's going to be a lot of that.
Nigel Spink went crazy, and it's like, whoa, 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 just use your loaf, look at the situation, take a step back. I don't think Grealish is going to go around bashing on Villa. It's not his nature. Right, 3 points. Now, why didn't this come in, like, decades ago? UEFA are setting out proposals next month to replace the financial fair play rules, which they don't really exist, do they? Come on, let's
count for anything, do they?
They're laughable. With a salary cap and a luxury tax by the end of the year. So has this Grealish transfer and Messi transfer triggered them into this? Under the planned system, clubs in Europe, in European competition, I think it's more, this has been triggered from what's happening in La Liga and like Barcelona's meltdown and their wage percentage of outgoings. Under the planned system, clubs in Europe competition would be limited to spending a fixed percentage of their revenue, around 70% is the muted figure, on salaries. Any clubs breaching the cap would have to pay a luxury tax, under which the equivalent or more of any overspend would be into a pot to be redistributed. I'm presuming, is that redistributed for teams in the Champions League?
Probably grassroots or something like that.
That's not a punishment, though, is it, in terms of levelling up the field? Because it says clubs in European competition would be limited to spending a fixed percentage of their revenue. The only way this kind of evens the playing field is if your direct competitors get the cash from any luxury tax. Because, you know, how's that going to stop Manchester City or PSG? They'll just go, yeah, no problem. If this is going to grassroots, then we'll be seen as martyrs. Not martyrs, you know, do-gooders while we break the rules. It doesn't kind of work out. But I think that's 70%. I mean, when you're in, you're looking at the Barcelona situation, they're currently at 95%, which is way out of order. I think Villa under O'Neill were in the 80s. You can't sustain a business like that. It's ridiculous. No.
Well, Villa under Tony Shearer in the Championship can't have been very good, I'm sure.
Yeah, but they should bring this in Premier League. There should be a percentage, and 70 seems fair enough, because it also safeguards these teams that get promoted, then they just gamble on bang average players, which they've got to pay over the odds for to attract them. Then they get relegated, and then they're fucked
Sheffield United did with getting Brewster, for example. Prime example, just dreadful business.
Because like QPR, when they got relegated, they had Samba and all kinds of people on ridiculous wages.
And Singwa who wouldn't leave.
Yeah, and it just sank them. So there needs to be something done. And, this is not rocket science. This should have been in a long, long, long time ago. Meanwhile, George Best's family house, which is in around Belfast. Phil, this isn't the 60s futuristic one, is it? Well, it was futuristic in the 60s.
No, it's close enough to me. It's in Burnway and the Craigie Estate in Belfast.
So it's nothing to do with the one I'm thinking of. When he started to be, Champagne George or whatever they called him, he bought this like 60s futuristic house that, it was all kind of straight lines and almost like sci-fi. So that's what I thought it was. Anyway, carry on.
This is the family home. So this is his family home when he left, first of all, to go to Manchester United as a teenager. So whenever his father passed away, it passed over to a community development place, and they had it kept in its state in the early 2000s whenever they got it. But now it's been completely retro renovated, as they called it, into what it was like in the very early 1960s. But you can actually get it on Airbnb. I checked, and you can get it for between 85 and 130 quid, depending on the date you want to go to it. And you can see letters he wrote home to his parents and things like that. And there's a timeline of his career on the brick wall.
Well, if we ever visit you, Phil Shaw, that's where we'll be staying. Well, if it's round the corner from your gaff.
Well, everywhere's round the corner from, it's not a big place.
Yeah, speaking of Best, actually, I remember the auction house got in touch with my old man and said, this is going way, it's going back a few years, and took an ad out on our website because they were auctioning George Best's Aston Villa shirt when he played in that fundraising exhibition game. I think this is like early 80s. So he was, playing with like Alan Evans and everybody. I think it was against West Brom. And it actually sold off my site. It was through my site that they actually bought. I forgot how much the guy paid for it, but that was kind of cool. I remember when I was young, like outside of the England football team, in terms of like historical footballers that I would read about, I think it's George Best and then Gerd Müller as well of Germany, because you'd always see him scoring against England. I think it's in the 70s footage. And he passed away age 75, suffering from Alzheimer's, unfortunately. He was, legitimately one of the best international strikers around. He scored 68 goals in 62 appearances for West Germany, and I don't think San Marino were around in those days either. But most famously, he scored the winning goal in the 74 World Cup final against the Netherlands. And then his, you know, record during 15 years at Bayern Munich was just insane. It's almost a goal a game, man, wasn't it? 547 goals in 594 competitive games. Insanity. Point number three, probably one of the only people that can match him in the modern day, Lionel Messi. The fallout from his transfer to PSG continues, or information coming out. They've actually had to bend the rules of La Liga 1 in France to accommodate his number, because according to Rule 670, the numbers 1, 16 and 30 are exclusively and necessarily reserved for goalkeepers. And Messi wanted the 30 shirt like his first shirt at Barca, so they've had to bend over for that, a few brown paper envelopes to the rules keeper, and that was probably swept under the carpet. But the main crazy stat, apart from Messi also getting a load of socios, he apparently got millions. I mean, they haven't really confirmed. They haven't confirmed how much he was paid in that currency, but I was following that currency. It was, I mean, the investing, it's always about you buy the rumour, sell the news. And when his transfer was muted to PSG, the price of that socio shot up, and then it dropped, you know, when the deal's complete, because it's, you know, it's a pump and dump, essentially. But commercially, you see why PSG, they don't mind paying his wages. In the first 24 hours of his arrival, they sold 832,000 shirts.
That's bonkers, isn't it? I know, was it the UK store? They updated the UK store and it sold out in 7 minutes. And that was like 10 o'clock in the evening. It just went ballistic.
Wow. It's bizarre. I mean, I used to live in Paris and I would go and see them occasionally, and nothing was happening at that club. It was mid-table, and you thought, Paris, you know, one of the biggest, sexiest cities in the world. Surely it's a great foundation for a big football team, big European powerhouse.
If anything, you'd expect them to have maybe two.
Yeah, PSG never got it together. I mean, they're quite a modern, new club. I think it's like 70s, 79, if my memory serves me
they're
right.
They're very much like Man City, really.
And then, you know, fast forward a few years, boom, bang, bosh. And it's just a big marketing venture, isn't it, now?
Well, and the shirts become like a fashion item.
Yeah, because of the whole, well, the Nike thing, they've really gone to town on it, haven't they? And it became a hip-hop thing as well.
Yeah, it's become a hip-hop.
And there it is, that's as good as it gets on this stage. Nissan Townstar EV strikes again. It's an unstoppable van, unstoppable!
Look, just fantastic. You can actually see the ProPilot technology in action. Effortless parallel parking.
It moves with all the confidence that comes with a 5-year warranty.
And with a bench full of all-star van experts, there's real strength in depth here.
That's all-star quality.
Search Nissan Townstar EV and visit your local all-star van centre to see for yourself.
Terms and conditions apply. 5 years or 100,000 miles, whichever comes first.
ProPilot is an advanced driver assist technology. Driver's responsibility to stay alert, drive safely, and control vehicle at all times.
One size fits all seemed like a good idea for clothes.
Nice dress. It's a t-shirt.
Until you tried it on. Same goes for your healthcare. That's why United Healthcare offers a variety of flexible, budget-friendly coverage for medical, vision, dental, and more. So whether you're between jobs, coming off a parent's plan, or even missed open enrollment, you can find the plan that fits you best. Find out more about United Healthcare coverage at uh1.com. That's uh1.com.
Picture the scene. All of your mates around, you've got your McNugget share boxes ready to go. Partner this with your team playing champagne football. Perfect. Order McDelivery now on the McDonald's app. There's nothing quite like a McDelivery. At participating restaurants, 18 plus, serving times, delivery fee and terms apply. See mcdonalds.com.
There you go. Right, let's move on to the main show. Now, going into this game, what we've been saying on Match Club, the My Old Man Said Patrons Match Club, and generally is we're not prepared. We need two more weeks pre-season, surely, because A, we've just done all this swapperoonie with Grealish and these Leon Bailey coming in, who literally came out of isolation after being in Jamaica for a while, what, on Thursday before the game?
Yeah, they announced him Thursday, yeah.
In terms of actually training, I think probably had 2 days, maybe?
Yeah, 12 tops, yeah.
One and a half. Yeah. Then you've got Ings just coming in as well.
Buendia has been injured.
And then you've got all these injuries. Sanson, Buendia, Traore,
Martinez, who've only had, two weeks training.
You could almost say it was, you know, shambolic, the preparations in terms of...
And then you factor in the COVID disruption of losing two games, losing the manager for, 10 days? And
yeah, so a bit of a joke. So I think pre-match in the match club, I was saying, don't be surprised if we come unstuck here, because I'm not expecting us to win this.
Well, Watford were very well prepared. I'd seen the day before the game, Ben Foster was speaking, and he said they returned for pre-season on the 28th of June, and they had very few international players. So they had that group that got them promoted, plus any new signings, and they've had time to bed in.
And if you're Watford, you've got to seize every advantage you could possibly get to stay up. And if I was the manager of that team, I would say, right, get in early. We haven't got that many distractions. Let's get this down.
Yeah.
And let's hit the ground running, because that's, as always, any season, if you hit the ground running quicker, you can accumulate some points. I mean, we did pretty well last season. You know, you're looking back on it and, you know, all the cliches, oh, you need, you know, 6-7 games to bed players in. We potentially played our best football in the first...
four games, we won the first four.
Yeah. And, you know, and against big teams. And then we never saw the likes of some of those performances again. So sometimes it can be a bit random. But in this case, I just had a bad feeling about this. The last time I had this feeling was when we got relegated, when we just bought all those money ball players in. And it was like, hang on a minute, we haven't had actual time to play these players together. And they're all coming in from different countries. There's really no preparation here. Ooh, I think we're going to be in trouble here. Then you win your first game against Bournemouth away, and then I think that was the last time we won for months,
for years. Literally on the road.
So a bit of a warning danger sign there. I mean, we won't soil our pants until the Newcastle game, but if anything goes wrong there. But yeah, so expectations Watford's, you know, I think last season of the four English leagues, they had the best home record as well.
They won 19 of 23 at home.
So I mean, does that mean anything because there was no crowds? Well, it does actually, because nobody else was winning home games like they were, because everybody else's home form was really, you know, to be found in their away performances.
I think, yeah, the barometer of a newly promoted team up against a side who've lost their talisman and they know they've got a lot of new players and they're playing in front of their own fans. It's kind of all these factors all play into it. And Watford would have seen Villa and gone, right, they've got that sort of newly promoted kind of exuberance, haven't they? They're just like, fuck it, let's just go for it.
Well, they've got, like, they'll be thinking, well, they're going to be relying on Buendia. Let's just hustle him out of the game. And I can't really see them doing much beyond that, this Villa team.
And hustle him out of the game, they did.
Yeah. I mean, rather than go through it bit by bit, I mean, it all came undone. I mean, 10 minutes. The first thing I said when they went 1-0 up in Match Club, I said, this has got 3-0 vibes all over it. And there it was, 3-0. Before we could, you know, get back into it. I mean, there was one thing that stood out to me. It was like almost like there was such naivety in how Villa was set up. And hang on a minute, Sarr's really fast. That's why, you know, Villa have been linked to him and 100 other clubs. That will be an obvious threat. But it looked like that only became apparent. They only knew about him as what he could offer actually during the game.
They shouldn't have been blind after the second minute, because the way he burned past Molly Target in the second minute and nearly caused problems, that should have been a sign then that, right, we need to do something with this now. He need to nail it down now.
And then it kept on happening. It was about, three times before the goal, and then continued to happen. I mean, I haven't seen a Villa player get tormented like that in a first half in ages.
He was turned inside, outside. I mean, it was...
It's very seldom you see a left-back get hooked at half-time.
Yeah, and the context is, if you voted most improved player last season, it would have been Matt Target. And the main reason for that is defensively, how he came on. I mean, he was, you know, always reasonable going forward and would overlap Grealish pretty well. But defensively... he didn't look like to be the player that we'd hoped we'd got, like a solid left back defensively. But then last season, he was great. I mean, some of his tackling was immense, but he just got cooked on a spit.
It was one way of putting it. Yeah. Just,
it was, it was almost, I mean, that was a polite way of putting it.
Yeah.
But I was inferring all kinds of nasty things.
The back four in general just didn't, I say back four, actually, the whole defensive shape unit just didn't look at the races. And then when you think about how undercooked we were, of course we weren't at the races.
Yeah, I mean, what I was kind of banking on while we settled down as a team and got into the season was the back five, if you include Martinez, was a unit which at least knows each other and it knows the drill, it knows how it sets up and the organisation should be inbuilt. But they seemed lost. I mean, they got on the first goal, they got suckered because both Konsa and Mings were looking at the ball as it was coming in and, you know, their man just peeled off and he just made the space for himself. Konsa did well to react to get the initial block in, but it falls to his feet and it's pretty much, it kind of went under Martinez. I don't know if...
It's a disappointing goal. He'll be a bit annoyed with that one as well, I think.
Yeah, let's put it this way. He's saved harder shots than that,
mm-hmm.
or made more difficult saves than that.
And then when you continue to play as Villa had done throughout that first half, the second goal, it doesn't come as a surprise. And when they get a lucky break in the manner that they did with the deflection, you think, well, of course something like that's happened.
Yeah.
Because you're just inviting them on.
You can go online and you can find like the average positions of each player for the whole game. I mean, the only two players apart from Martinez that are in Villa's half for an average position for 90 minutes are Konsa and Mings. I mean, the two fullbacks are in halfway. Even when Young went in the left back, he's in halfway. The two centre mids are in halfway as well. I mean, basically we're all in the Watford half except the two centre backs, and even there they're not exactly close to their own box either. All that space in behind for Sarr to run into.
You're almost playing like a high press against a team that are playing really simply back to front. They weren't going to play the ball. They were just like turning us round, hit it down the channels, and it worked every time.
Possession 62%. That was Villa's. But the thing is, they didn't have one shot until McGinn scored. Shot on target was the first one, was the 70th minute when McGinn scored.
Which is pretty pathetic, to be honest.
And it's almost like we just fell into a really rudimentary trap, because what they just wanted to do, they wanted to play like the away team against us and just counter us.
Well, we played a sort of a very deep back line to a point, but then there was a massive gap so they could actually play through us and get onto the back four easily, because the midfield were pressing high and, you know, McGinn, Nakamba, Buendia, they're not physically, I mean, you know, there's a bit of aggression there, but they're not physically dominant. They're not dominant in the air. We weren't winning the first or the second ball, which Smith will have been raging about. And my take from Smith's post-match from it all was that he said it was like a bad pre-season game.
Yeah, and then you had other players like Al Ghazi just falling over, giving them the ball, giving them gift-wrapped opportunities.
Yeah, I mean, the second goal just comes from Al Ghazi. He got the ball in a great position on the edge of the Watford box, and instead of having a shot like he usually does, he just seemed lost and ran straight across it and then just gave it to Buendia when he had five round him. Watford break, and then that's 2-0. And when you're 2-0 down, you know, it's hard to come back from that.
Yeah, I think, I mean, this is, again, showcased, and this is kind of obvious to most Villa fans, is this issue of midfield. I'm not talking about balance, it's organisation. Buendia didn't have anybody really around him. He got the ball and suddenly was confronted by, you know, three or four of their players, and there was no Villa player in sight. It's almost like, here you go, do something with it.
He's just running up blind alleys.
And so that brings you to Nakamba and McGinn. And I'm thinking about McGinn. I know I spoke a bit about this on Match Club, where is he like an individual player, or does he, when he's told to play more number eight, is he disciplined enough? Because he, you know, what's the attributes of McGinn? Energetic, snappy. So he's kind of got the perfect attributes to be the engine room of Villa. But the amount of times we've been outplayed in the middle of the park, you know, if you think about Leeds, you think about Southampton when they were 4-0 up against us, Leeds when they slammed us 3-0, and now these guys just seem to breeze through us, and you're thinking, well, how can that be? If McGinn's in there, he should be an adequate engine room, and you've got like Nakamba as the enforcer breaker upper, for want of a better word, and it's not enough. And so is that because McGinn's not fulfilling that central role? Because he's not disciplined to stay in the formation, but he wasn't getting kind of close. He wasn't really working with Buendia at any real stage of the game.
I think just the overall midfield shape and balance just wasn't working. And then when you had El Ghazi on the left-hand side, not tucking in and helping when he probably should have as well. And then obviously, you know, you had Young on the other side, or Traore later in the game, who wasn't exactly known for his defensive attributes.
Yeah, but I'm talking about, you know, we got blitzed 3-0 early doors. And
I think we saw, didn't we, as you said, like a few times last season, our midfield would get walked through. And I wonder if that's because they're not protected, or the unit doesn't work. I can't put a finger on what it is.
They're always outnumbered. The opposition always seem to have an extra man. I mean, when you look at the way Watford lined up, they did have three in the middle and three against Villa's two. But I mean, they don't work as a unit. They don't work as a team. It's very much right, get past McGinn, right, get past Nakamba, and then right, you're away. It's like you never see them doubling up on anybody.
Some supporters are just praying that some kind of holy grail £40 million midfielder is just going to come out of the blue before the transfer window closes, and it'll solve the midfield problems, and he'll be the fulcrum and like a talisman figure in the middle of the park. But I don't think that player's coming. I think they bought the midfielder to strengthen the area, which was Morgan Sanson. We didn't really see much of him. He was obviously getting, climatizing to the Premier League, and then he got injured, so his pre-season's been shot through. You've got the return of Douglas Luiz, whether that will help us. I mean, we've seen him in, certainly since he's been at the club, there's been patches where he did look very good. Then there's patches where he looks a bit casual. One week you're worried that Manchester City were going to trigger their release clause, and then another week you're going, no, they're never going to trigger it because they don't want him. So he's coming back. But the thing is, we've got a bunch of players for those two central positions, and I don't think Villa are in the business of stockpiling, especially after they've just bought one of them in January. So I don't see somebody coming in. Do you?
No,
I don't. I think maybe in January if you're having big problems, but I think Smith will back himself to get the combination right. And that's what I think the problem is. It's they haven't got the combination or the shape right. Because we saw at times last season when you'd get Luiz on good form, McGinn on good form, and they could run through people's defences as well. So they've got it in them.
And if you do pick two out of those and it clicks, I mean, you're talking about players that will want out. I mean, Luiz won't want to hang around if he's not playing.
Yeah.
The most optimistic combination, and that's hypothetically speaking, and it's based more on hopium, is Sanson becomes the real deal, and then you've got Sanson and McGinn.
And you've got two box-to-box players, and they can then interchange, can't they? One can go, one can sit, etc. And then Buendia can do what it is he wants or has to do.
So that's taking a leap of faith that Sanson actually comes up to speed and actually brings a lot to the party.
My only thing from Saturday was that midfield was, and the attacking side of our game, we're built, or Smith clearly wants us to have the ball, but we're not particularly well set up, or weren't at Watford, to not have the ball. Whereas actually, I remember games like Leeds away, for example, Leicester away was a good example, Old Trafford was another one where we actually were set up really well without the ball in games like that. Nakamba played really well, I remember, at Leeds away, didn't he? Had a really, really good game. And Chelsea and Spurs at the end of the season, he did good.
I'm going even further in that hopium. I'm thinking that the hopeful mix is going to be Sanson and Luiz, because I just don't think, I mean, McGinn played all right, played well, but I don't think he can play much better than... Yeah, I don't think he can play much better than he did, and I think that's the problem.
But, they've made the decision to make him vice-captain, so what does that say?
It says he's a big player. He's popular. I like him. I just think you need to get his role right, and I still think we see from the goal, you see when he plays for Scotland, you want McGinn going forwards. Can't shackle him.
But in terms of our forward players, we've just went out and bought three for like £30 million a pop, so I don't think on paper he's our best forward option. He's not going to be a number 10, is he? Because that would be Buendia's role. And we need, because we're playing these wide men, your Baileys, Traore or Buendia, if he goes out wide, you're going to need some defensive solidity there. So this is, this is getting the balance right. That is the big problem.
And that's going to be the big question, I think, for the next few weeks or months, potentially.
Yeah, but you could argue it's been the big question for the past three seasons. That's the issue.
Yeah.
Yeah, because, I mean, at least, like with Grealish, you had somebody who could hold the ball. And, you remember the game against Arsenal where him and Barkley were toying with Arsenal with their back line. And
that's a team that don't press very well, though.
And we needed better ball retention in this game. I think a big miss was Watkins, just to, in terms of moving their back line around. This would have been Watford's back line. So when he comes back, I think, that's obviously going to change a lot. And it will give Buendia something to aim at as well. I mean, we're relying on those two to have some kind of telepathic link.
It's going to be a really interesting one, against Newcastle, when they've had another week on the training ground. They've got the reaction to this. They'll clearly watch the video, they'll analyse it, etc. They'll hopefully be a little bit sharper for training together. I do wonder if they might have a bit of a behind closed doors game in midweek of some kind.
I think they're going to have to scratch.
Yeah.
But, we're not going to read too much into this, because, as we said, going into the game, I wasn't very confident, just because our preparation's been all over the place. And it was it's glaringly obvious as well. And we didn't really set up to get a point either. We were so open. It was naivety at times, the way they there seemed to be no provisional plan to deal with Sarr at all. They needed a Nakamba to shadow him as soon as he got over the halfway line to come across and do something.
Could have almost gone like what Grealish had done to him and just go, well, he's the threat. Because I didn't think, cleverly, adequate player, but he's not going to destroy you.
Well, he's not there too, is he?
Ran us ragged. You think, just double up on him if you have to. And you go man to man, you take him out early. Or you put your foot through him, he's done you once. If he does you again, then you put your foot through him and go, fuck it, take the yellow card, snap him in half if you have to. Because that's what a Guardiola team would do, isn't it? They put their foot in.
Yeah, but he's just going to get up and he's just going to anger him and he's just going to do it again and again.
But you put your foot in, you go with a tactical foul.
It's going to get you off, but not early doors. You'd be off. I mean, the most of their damage was in the first half. And I think if Target yellowed, he'd have been off as well. The yellowed early doors. They needed somebody to come across and basically help, put a layer in front of Target. Nakamba to come across every time, or even McGinn. McGinn did well when he tracked him back that one time.
What I will say is Cash didn't have a great game either, because the same sort of scenario was happening down his side as well. But the thing is, Cash has got a bit more pace to get back in and get himself out of trouble. Matt Target doesn't have that sort of acceleration over the quick distance.
Cash was getting pelters from the crowd. You're just a shit Jack Grealish.
It's all about the haircut, isn't it?
Yeah, he needs to sort that one out, I think. That's how you nip that song in the bud.
Yeah.
Right, well, normally when we lose a game, something that we were doing last season, I think we should do. The first one I did, it was a bit harsh, maybe upset a few listeners, I don't know, where I said if you had to line them all up and shoot one of them, who would it be? In this case, if you had to line them all up and send one of them to do a bit of labouring to help the Blues rebuild those two stands that are crumbling around their ears.
Put them on roof duty.
Do a bit of slating or whatever. I don't know what they've...
I think they both got a lot of slating.
Probably. Their stands are probably made out of, cardboard or something. But who would you be sending off to St Andrews to help with the building work there?
It's kind of easy, isn't it, this week?
Yeah. Phil, you name the man.
It has to be Matt Target. It has to be.
I said earlier, man, when do you ever see a left back get hooks at half time? It's normally an ineffective striker.
Yeah, I was going to call it quits on the game there, but the reaction to what Smith did at half time. Now, I'm thinking that Traore and Bailey I don't think he wanted to play Bailey in this game. I think give him 5 minutes at the end or whatever. But I think if they were match fit, they would have both come on at half time, or you would have hoped. You'd have hoped for something more than Ramsey, because when Ramsey came on, my first instinct is, oh, we're not going to win this game now. We're not going
to
come
back. He actually
did
all right, to be fair.
But he did. He actually added some spark, and he said, oh, hang on a minute. He's trying to get something going. And, if his shot was on target, who knows? That would have been a good time to score, and it would have done him a world of good and really helped him stake a claim. But the fact that Bailey came on with 30 minutes to go suggested, oh, we're desperate here. But he did pretty well, I thought. He got an insight into what we can expect, even though, he's known the guys literally hours.
It's like conviction he has, doesn't it? Even the way he whipped the cross in, there was no waiting, there was no floated ball or nothing. He drove that across the box and let McGinn get on the half volley.
Yeah, he'll definitely give teams something to think about if we create enough. If we attack on different, have multiple prongs of attack, that's where if he gets a bit more space, he will really cause damage if he's, up against, it's one-on-one against their fullback. But, I'm hoping Luis comes back, Sansón comes back, you get Bailey fit, Watkins comes back.
You got some dynamism then, which we lacked.
But there was one glaring thing. I mean, at halftime in Match Club, I was saying, look, just bring bloody Wesley on. Just go for it. Wesley's got to earn his spurs if he's got a future at this club. And we need, it's all right whipping in crosses all the time if all our players are like 5 for 8. And I think it was a glaring... signpost that he's not bringing on Wesley in that situation shows you the amount of conviction they have in Wesley now.
I think he's a last chance saloon battering ram type player, isn't he? But in terms of if we want to make things happen, he's not that kind of player. He's just a get on the end of things player.
Yeah, and that's exactly what we needed. We needed strikers on the bloody pitch, and he didn't even fancy Wesley through the whole game.
Nope.
And, you know, we're talking about 2020. I know inflation goes up every season, but he was a record signing at, you know, 20-odd million. Mm-hmm. And that shows you where we are with him. I mean, Smith said before the game that they're looking to get people out. It didn't seem very convinced that anybody would come in unless there's like some kind of opportunity that pops up. But I wonder if Wesley's on the top of the list of people you're going to get out. But I think we mentioned on the last podcast, he's going to have to show something to get any kind of value because he's been injured for a year and a half.
Yeah, he holds no market value currently.
Yeah.
As a, you know, as a signing, maybe as a loan player, but...
So, I mean, they can write that one off in their own minds in terms of, well, he got injured, you know, bad luck. But surely he's... I mean, it will come out in the wash, won't it, once he leaves the club. But surely he's not done and dusted just yet. But I was a bit... if he's not coming on in that game, of all games, then, you know, when Watkins is fit and Ings is fit, it's not looking good, is it?
No.
No.
Right, before we end the show, let's just have some burning questions. We'll end on a burning question. I don't know if we'll reprise underrated or overrated. We'll have a look at the pool of players left. Could do Grealish, I suppose. Oof. But we want to try to round this show off. So burning questions, Patio Young says, who do we play on the left wing?
This is just generally, or is this for Newcastle?
No, I think just generally. And
probably Watkins.
So where's Bailey?
On the right, cutting in.
But Smith has said he didn't buy Watkins to play on the wing.
Smith has said other things before.
I'm intrigued to see this team on Saturday. If Watkins is fit, it's going to... I don't think anybody knows how this is all going to work then. Because you don't spend that money on Ings to put him on the bench, do you?
No, he's not going to be on the bench. And, you know, Smith has come out and said, you know, Watkins isn't there to play on the wing either. You said Watkins on the left there. But, you know, as you know, we've noticed, he does drift out to the left naturally. Yep. So can you play a formation where you play at two up top, but that one of them who's playing up top is actually your left winger?
Yeah, almost plays them like staggered, so that one's off the striker. So Watkins is still a striker, but he's kind of plays almost, he just has a free role to float around a bit.
Hopefully they've thought about this one and they've prepared it more so than how they prepared against Watford.
On paper, I haven't got a fucking clue what our best team is. On form, the back four and keeper picks itself. After that, I haven't got a clue.
This is why we get Bud on the podcast, people. for his insight.
Normally it's all right, but at the moment it's like everyone's scratching their head.
No, yeah. I think you're right. Because surely we can't just go... I mean, we were watching that friendly, go 4-4-2, and suddenly we're doing long throws. So everything Dean Smith's ever thought about, his whole ethos has just gone out the window. Ah, fuck it. Sam Allardyce was right in the first place.
Very complicated.
Like, we're going back to 4-4-2 in long throws.
Yeah. So it's kind of intriguing. Unfortunately, Watkins was injured, so we didn't get an early insight, because I can't see us just playing straight up 4-4-2, Mike Bassett style.
I don't know how we would accommodate a front two, and either because then you'd potentially lose all your width, or you'd just become a very narrow team. Because I'd imagine if he wants to... See, the only way I could see it is if it was like a 4-1-4-1. But then how that central midfield combination would work, I don't know. You'd almost have to jettison one of the good wide players. Someone like a Bailey all of a sudden wouldn't fit in.
Yeah, but you don't spend that money on somebody.
He's come to play as well. So it is kind of, I really don't know.
I think he's going to play Ings as a 10 and put Buendia on the left and Bailey on the right.
Maybe. Maybe.
I think it'll be the other way around. Buendia on the right and Bailey on the left.
And then he'll continue to play two holding midfielders.
Yeah. But this is the thing. I don't think they're up to European qualifying level, the two holding midfielders, both going forward, well, let's say being the engine room and also defensively. Although saying that, Nakamba works when he's just like the... out and out DM against, you know, better teams. But then you can't really afford to play two up top. And one system that makes me think to accommodate Ings and Watkins is the old three centre-backs with two wing-backs.
Yeah, two wing-backs, yeah, and play just a straight three in the middle.
Yeah, because that actually works.
Yeah, and more teams are going back to it, aren't they?
In terms of suiting our personnel. So, and then you can have Buendia playing a little bit like on the top of the Christmas tree in midfield behind those two to link up.
And then, of course, it's where does, you know, all of a sudden you've got Bailey, Traore, Alghazi all probably sat on the bench.
Sell them.
Get your money back.
Yeah. This is the problem. I mean, we've got all these wingers, and that includes Trezeguet, but they're not really giving you consistency. And this is, you know, it's been our gripe all the time. So you're just hoping that Bailey does give you a decent, you know, let's say he's more consistent than those guys and a bit more electrifying, then that's him top of the pecking order. I don't mind Traore coming in and out for his, you know, cameos and sprinkling a bit of magic around the place, but I can see him more as an off the bench type of player. But it's that standard in the middle there.
It's the thing, isn't it? On their day they're good players, but you need, for where we want to be, you've got to be. We needed more consistency last year.
And by the way, that formation, three centre backs, would have probably worked against Watford in terms of how the game panned out,
especially with Twan Zabi, who's an athletic player.
Yeah, because old Target would have had would have had assistance from the left side of that central three, so probably would have worked. But it's all right, you know, in hindsight now. I would be interested to know. To tap into minds and to know exactly at this moment in time what they think of Morgan Sanson. On the spectrum of, oh, fuck, we dropped a bollock there, to don't worry, he's going to come good and he'll transform us. I wonder where we are in terms of behind the scenes on that Richter scale.
It might be a lot of hope, but let's not rely too much.
Yeah. We'd love to say they gave him the 8 because it's a storied history, but then... The previous occupier of the year.
In recent history, fucking hell. Barclay and Lansbury.
Yeah, no, that's what I thought. I mean,
Poison Chalice.
I needed an excuse to put out an article just on the shirt numbers, so I kind of tied in the 1 to 11. Oh, they've given Sanson the number 8 shirt. Does that suggest that he actually has a role? They actually rate him? What can we read into these shirt number tea leaves? But anyway, that's what this, the whole podcast is, just on our knees praying that Sanson is the Holy One. Right, well, we will answer more questions in the Mad Few podcast for this month, which will be on the My Old Man Said Patreon channel. Speaking of which, big shout out and thank you very much to John Shea, John O'Sullivan and Derek Ashman for signing up as My Old Man Said patrons. And also a big shout out to Rob Millington as well for signing up as an annual member. If you sign up as an annual member, you get 2 free months, which is 15% off. By becoming a My Old Man Said patron, as well as supporting the show, you also get access to Match Club, which is it's like a 24/7 secret society, which meets up. It'll be mainly away games this season. We're looking into ways of doing home games or doing something else, but this is something that's ever evolving. And also you'll get access to the My Old Man Said Patreon podcast channel, which kicks off again for this season with multiple different shows. Some of them aren't actually football related, so it's more than just football, the My Old Man Said universe. So do go to myoldmansaid.com, check on the Patreon link on the menu, and find out more details there. Right, gents, anything to add?
Not from me, other than just looking forward to being back in the ground. You know, hopefully it's a very different occasion. It almost feels like the season starts on Saturday, really.
Yeah, that was a bit of a false start. It's not the first or last time we'll have a bad start. And Smith always apparently finishes well. So,
just to one degree or the other.
When he says finishes well, I was hoping he doesn't mean the last two games of the season, which seems to be a theme that we've got into in this in the Premier League since he's been with us. But yeah, no, I think he needs a result against Newcastle. I think it's a great opportunity of if you could pick any team at this moment in time. And we'll think about Brentford when we get to it, because that will be similar to Watford, because they look very organised and very concentrated on, in terms of they know what their strengths are and they know where they're going to get some purchase. I think they'll be easier to plan against, because Watford, that was, I'm still shaking my head to how we just seem so unprepared there. But we move on to Villa Park we go. Let's hope it has the same crackling electricity as the Everton game when we returned to the Premier League, because I thought that was going to be the atmosphere for every game, but it seemed to be a bit of a one-off. But I'd imagine the emotion for most people coming back, seeing the full house for the first time for a couple of seasons, one and a half.
Since the Spurs game, really.
Yeah, so a lot to look forward to there. So until then, it's goodbye from me and it's goodbye from them.
Goodbye.
Goodbye.
away days are great, but there's nothing quite like playing at home. The same goes for McDonald's. Maximize your home ground advantage with McDelivery. Order now on the McDonald's app. At participating restaurants, 18 plus serving times, delivery fee and terms apply. See mcdonalds.com.
And there it is. That's as good as it gets on this stage. Nissan Townstar EV strikes again. It's an unstoppable van. Unstoppable!
Look, just fantastic. You can actually see the ProPilot technology in action. Effortless parallel parking.
It moves with all the confidence that comes with a 5-year warranty.
And with a bench full of all-star van experts, there's real strength in depth here.
That's all-star quality.
Search Nissan Townstar EV and visit your local all-star van centre to see for yourself.
Terms and conditions apply. 5 years or 100,000 miles, whichever comes first.
ProPilot is an advanced driver assist technology. Driver's responsibility to stay alert, drive safely, and control vehicle at all times.
This podcast is proud to be part of the TalkSport Fan Network. TalkSport. Powered by fans.